And now it's time to turn to our Friday newscap and some voices from the news this week.
If you want to say it's been too cautious, I accept that. Okay? We're talking about an illness and a virus that has been spreading rapidly. We understand much more today than we did 6 weeks ago. And I'm hopeful and optimistic as to what can happen over the next several weeks.
For the retailers, the smaller retailers that aren't ready to go, they'll wait until they could do so safely. But we've heard from a lot of different companies that they feel that they can meet the Friday date set by the governor where they could open their doors.
And then suddenly, yesterday, I heard that he was sort of loosening things even more. I was a little bit surprised. It's very thoughtful to say that retail doing curbside, that made some sense to me, but now opening salons and restaurants, I think that was a little bit too quick based on the data I'm seeing.
We saw the brand new production lines where you're making high quality N95 respirators and they are made to perfection. There's no bad masks like various countries have been sent some very bad masks from other places.
Now with us to talk about Governor Ducey's latest moves, President Trump's visit to Arizona, and the legislature not quite adjourning. Our former legislative leader Chad Campbell of Strategies 360 and Paul Bentz of High Ground. Guys, good morning.
Thanks for having us.
Hi, how you doing?
I have to use my same running gag. You guys are at least 6 feet apart, right? It's just the old stuff is just
yes.
You got to keep that churning. That's how I look at
it. Classic.
Chad, let me start with you on Governor Ducey's moves here. Initially, the stay-at-home order was going to stay into effect till May 15th, and it still is officially, but he announced some tweaks on that. Do you think people are going to be ready to shop? Do you think people are going to be ready to sit in restaurants at this point?
I think some people are, but I think overall the general public, for the most part, is probably still leery of going back and sitting in a semi-crowded restaurant or getting too close to people they don't know. And so I think you're going to have a lot of hurdles to be gotten over the next several weeks, several months from both the public and private sector working together to try to figure that out. And that, of course, is assuming we don't have some setback with another spike in COVID cases, any outbreaks locally or regionally. So, there's a lot of unknown still. And how we proceed, I think, is just as important as how we've handled this to this point so far.
Paul, you're certainly more than this, but we've turned to you often for data. What do you make of what you've been seeing about even polling data when it comes to how people, whether in Arizona or across the country, feel about reopening strategies?
Well, there hasn't been that much polling data as of yet because it's very difficult to get accurate data when everyone's stuck at home and picking up the phone. You'll get an oversaturation of the audience. So there hasn't been a lot of data on this, but you look at the numbers that your own organizations reporting 10,000 plus cases, a 14.7% unemployment rate. Those are two numbers that sort of conflict, but the governor's taken a methodical approach. He's not taken the same approach to, say, Montana or Georgia that just opened everything up. I think he's taken a step-by-step approach. I think the big thing that we need to recognize is that masks and social distancing are still going to be important, and I hope that the administration that's going to be pretty important.
And I would also add this. I mean, I think, the governor has, I think, done some things well, done other things not so well. It's gone back and forth. And the key now is how do you actually put in place protections for workers? How do you help the unemployed? There's a lot of things that could be done here in the state to improve the situation we're in, be it raising the unemployment insurance cap, be it putting in, paid sick leave and protections for healthcare costs, things like that. But if you're going to actually ask people to go back to work and try to help those who can't find work yet, you need to take some serious drastic steps to put safety and precautions in place. And I think that's going to be the measuring stick for how this crisis is handled or how this crisis is viewed when we all look back on this, say, next year.
Paul, I also think it's going to be important.
Go ahead, Paul.
Well, I also think it's going to be important for the governor to continue to work with local leaders. We saw as we started to shut things down that he was being pushed along the way with several of the local municipal leaders and mayors. I think it's going to be important that he does the same as he ramps things up. I don't think we need another situation where we're conflicting with local leaders. I think they all need to work together to make sure they're on the same.
Paul, what do you think led to the governor this week deciding that, for example, more, you know, non-essential retailers could open up on Monday, stores could let people in today, restaurants could start dine-in on Monday, when last week it seemed as though that was maybe at least a couple weeks off yet?
Well, I think we're seeing that reflected. I know we're going to talk a little bit about the legislature, and I think we're seeing some of the similar forces, Republican folks that are really unhappy with the speed in which things are open. There's a lot of external pressure, I think, being applied by different folks that are eager to get things moving. And as the unemployment rate climbs, there's pressure to get things open.
Chad, the governor was asked specifically about political pressure when he made his remarks earlier this week and said they had nothing to do with it. Do you buy that?
No, I don't buy that. And that's not a dig on the governor. I just don't know of any elected official who doesn't succumb in some way, shape or form to political pressure at some point. I think there's no doubt this is political pressure to some degree. And I also think there's economic realities at play here. But it goes back to my earlier point. The entire country is talking about reopening in some way, shape, or form. You know, there's some Republican states that I think are moving far too quickly. There's some Democratic states that are slowly doing it. But if you're going to do it, you have to make sure you're putting in place safety mechanisms for workers. And you have to put in place help for the unemployed and healthcare precautions and healthcare standards, I should say. So if you're going to reopen, you have to do it safely. And I will say some of the statements I've seen from the legislative leaders, they talk about liability for employers. They talk about all these other things, but I don't see any language about protecting the actual workers. And I think that is something that we are not talking about here in Arizona. And I think it's going to become a pretty big discussion over the next several weeks.
Paul, follow up on that, would you?
Yeah, I agree with Chad on that, that this is something that has to be addressed, looking at the workers, making sure that they are safely able to go back to work. The worst thing that we can have happen is have a massive resurgence as we hopefully start to come around the corner on this. Post-summer, we get back to work, people start thinking they're back to normal, and then having everything have to shut down. That would be the biggest disaster that we could face. So there has to be those careful measures in place to make sure that we're not opening up too quickly. Otherwise, having to shut things down would be a disaster.
Paul, let me stick with you on this one. When we talk about data, obviously Arizona, the governor announced a testing blitz. That has been a little bit tepid in terms of the actual numbers that we've seen so far, but people actually getting tested. But then there was also some controversy this week over Dr. Carrie Crist and the governor and ASU and U of A researchers who are modeling. And apparently some of the modeling numbers didn't line up necessarily with what some more optimistic projections would be. And then this turned into something. Basically, it seems as though we'd all want as much information as possible. How did this strike you, this idea that, well, let's put this research on pause and whatnot? Seems confusing at this point when we just seem to want as many numbers as we could find.
Right. And I think it was the right move for them to reverse course and return to working with the ASU and U of A professors on this. It's hard to put that genie back in the bottle, but as a data guy myself, we have to trust science. We have to get as many data sources and data points as we can to look through this. And, you know, I think there's a bigger point at play here, though, that is important to note. Our economic long-term recovery depends on our universities, depends on them building that trained and skilled workforce. And we look to them and we put them up as trustworthy sources to create good students and create good data. We have to show that we trust them with this opportunity.
Chad, you referenced the not conflict, but the fact that there is political pressure, there are economic pressures, there are all sorts of different factors going into the decision making here. How should policymakers be looking at different models when they're saying different things and trying to make informed decisions about what to do with the economy and other things based on what are often conflicting numbers?
Yeah, you know, modeling is you know, scientific and art combined. It's much like polling, right, Paul? Paul would say the same thing about polling in some ways.
Absolutely.
And really, the key to success when you're looking at modeling is as you get more and more data in, you can start to figure out usually which models are working best and start to rely more on those parameters and those factors and everything else that were used to build that modeling scheme. But I think, you know, the bigger thing is beyond modeling, and this is where I think, again, we're behind the curve, is we testing is the key to all of this. This is the key to success, not just in Arizona, across the country. It has been the key to success across the world. We have to test, and we have to do pretty extensive contact tracing to make sure we understand people's movements, where hotspots are popping up, and then we can start to build response mechanisms, response policies, response protocols to when those hotspots pop up. But if we're not doing that, we're going to have, I think, a very tough time over the next few months and as we head back into fall. And to Paul's point, we do not want to have a serious relapse here. So this modeling is great. I'm really happy the governor has kind of re-upped on the modeling again. I think that was a really bad decision. I'm glad they reversed course on that. But even more importantly is we still have to keep ramping up on the testing, and we have to do contact tracing and using data to find hotspots and where people are getting infected and how it's spreading. That is going to be the key to managing this crisis, not just this year, but next year and for the foreseeable future until we have some type of vaccine or effective treatment.
Well, let me jump in with the phrase political pressure again, guys, just to follow up on that. We heard from Senator Sinema. She was very critical of the initial decision before the reversal. And then, of course, we wondered, some of us, about the timing of Governor Ducey pulling back a bit because it timed with President Trump's visit coming to Phoenix. Did either of those indicate political pressure to either one of you? Paul, let me start with you.
Well, it's certainly, whether or not there was political pressure, it was bad timing on the governor's part to do it while the president was in town. It gives the appearance of pressure, whether or not it exists. And so you take that blame, whether you deserve it or not, and then it gives your opponents an opportunity to make this a political issue and to expose some challenges there. The thing about data like this is that it's the same thing with polling. You got to look at the good, the bad, the ugly, and take it all in. You don't just get to pick and choose which numbers you look at. And that sort of smacks of picking and choosing. So it definitely was a mistake, whether or not it was intended to be a political one.
And Chad, go ahead.
I think there was definitely some political timing to all of this and some political pressure involved. And, you know, the President Trump visit was a sideshow of another nature. I don't know if we're going to talk about that or not. I'll table that for now.
Okay.
But there was definitely some political calculation involved in this. I think that the governor's been getting a lot of pressure from the more extreme base of the Republican Party and the quote unquote conservative movement. And I think he kind of bowed to that in some ways. But again, I give him credit at least for reversing course and using the modeling team again and teaming up with the universities on that front. And I hope that he continues to use science and data to help dictate decisions here, not just social pressure and political pressure.
Pressure is real, though. I mean, I'm seeing it on social media. I'm seeing it
Agreed.
In the public square. I'm seeing it in other places. Folks that I think are fairly reasonable are fed up. There is a
completely agree.
And you're starting to see different issues start to pop up. If you look at your feed, you're seeing less about the virus and more about other things. It's starting.
Yep.
Change, and I think that's part of the response as well.
Yeah, you know, I have a lot of friends who are watching South Korean baseball now, so I know that people need a diversion of some kind.
That's early
point.
In the morning, Chad. Wow.
And me, I'm a baseball fanatic, and I can't even bring myself to watch South Korean baseball, so, you know, I'm not quite there yet.
That is former legislative leader Chad Campbell of Strategies 360. Also with us, Paul Bentz of High Ground with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. We're in the midst of the Friday Newscap, which continues after this. It's the Friday Newscap here on KJZZ. Our guests today are Paul Bentz of High Ground and former legislative leader Chad Campbell of Strategies 360. I'm Steve Goldstein with Mark Brody.
Chad, before the break, you referenced President Trump's visit to the Phoenix area. I will let you untable that topic. I'm curious, this was not a rally like he has had in the past, kind of a lower key visit to a Honeywell facility where they were making masks. What did you make of his trip here? And I guess both the policy and the political aspects of it.
Well, I mean, I think, we're seeing Trump try to pivot away from the pandemic and dealing with the pandemic, quite frankly, and pivot to trying to portray himself as a leader on this issue, which I think any person who's been paying attention to this knows that he hasn't been, trying to pivot to he's doing all these things for the economy and trying to lead, and that is the image he's trying to project. His handling, his ratings on this situation have not been good. And so I think he's trying to really rebuild his image. And you know, if you recall, I mean, he really started his campaign for all intents and purposes in Arizona. I think he sees that this place is kind of a safe spot, but he also sees this place now as not so safe a spot because he knows actually this state could flip. McSally's in trouble. I think that she's not going to win at this point is my prediction. And I think Trump is going to have a really tough fight here. So he's trying to focus on turning that page again here in Arizona and rebuilding his brand. I don't think that visit went as he thought it would. I think there were so many things from not wearing a mask to the weird, awkward handshake, hug, whatever it was with the governor. So many things about that trip were so strange that it's very hard to unravel still, to be quite honest.
Paul, let me ask you about the choice to come to Arizona. As Chad referenced, this has been seen as a safe place for the president to come. He gets big crowds when he has his rallies here. But as polling, including some of yours, has indicated that his standing here might be changing somewhat, did you see this as a way to shore things up or maybe as a way to try to reverse some trends that he's been seeing in Arizona?
Well, first and foremost, it's absolute 100% proof that Arizona is a battleground state. He came to Arizona because it's going to be critical to his reelection chances. Our economy was one of the hottest in the nation. We have the fastest growing county in the United States. Things have been going very well here. And so this is one of the places that needs to lead the way in the economic recovery. It's also where he started his campaign. I think he's here to shore things up, try to rally the base and get people excited. There's no doubt that McSally's in trouble right now. Our own polling showed her down by 6 points. If he wants to keep control of the Senate, if Republicans want to keep control, McSally's going to be a critical component of that. So I think he was trying to shore several things up at once.
And guys, briefly before we move on from this topic, Chad, let me ask you, when it comes to what the president's strengths are, even for those who do not like him, he has a certain maybe odd charisma when he gets in front of a big bunch of people. And now we're in a situation where that can't happen. So did a visit like this actually mean anything? If he'd been able to hold a rally in Phoenix, maybe it would, but because it has those optics. But did this visit actually do anything for his political standing?
I don't think so. I mean, if anything, again, like I said, I think it probably backfired. I think it came across as awkward and contrived. Trump's base is not going anywhere. I think we can all agree on that for the most part. His base is not going anywhere. The key is, can he hold on to some of those voters that left the Obama coalition after the last cycle, went to Trump? Can he hold on to or get some of these new voters coming to the mix? And right now, that calculation is very difficult for him. So I think his only pathway to victory, and the same for McSally here in Arizona, is rallying the base, energizing them, and hoping they turn out in massive numbers. And so most of his effort's going to be focused on that. I don't think he's going to persuade many swing voters at this point or in the foreseeable future to come to his side.
But Paul, briefly, does this kind of event energize his base at all? Because it's him with people standing at least 6 feet apart from him, and it doesn't really give him a chance to use that phrasing that he loves to use and call people nicknames and whatnot.
It certainly is not the best version of what Trump's able to do. He's much better in a crowd. As Chad mentioned, definitely a little bit awkward. I haven't seen a more awkward hug since Rocky and Apollo Creed hugged on the beach in Rocky III.
That was after slow motion running, though. So
exactly, after slow motion running. But I think there's strategy here. His campaign manager is on Twitter saying they have the Death Star ready to go, a juggernaut campaign full of data, digital, TV, surrogates that they're all going to fire at Biden. So negative blitz is coming. So I think this is a calculated move to maybe put a few positive things out there before they go full negative on Biden.
And I want to point out, I saw that tweet about the Death Star. And I don't think they watched the Star Wars movies till the end. So it was probably a really bad reference. I also want to point out, we continued our streak of really awkward exchanges between governors and presidents. That we continue that streak here in Arizona as well. So we're on a roll.
Good streak. I'm also a little surprised the president didn't golf while he was here.
Yeah, true. That's a great point.
Are the putt-putts even open now? I know the big golf courses. We just had time to do 18 on with the windmill. You never know.
Chad, let me ask you about what's going on at your former place of employ at the Arizona House of Representatives. Legislature looked like it was maybe on course for an adjournment today. The Senate will be convening in just a couple of hours. But late last night, the House Speaker, Rusty Bowers, has said that his chamber is not going along with this plan to adjourn, that there's a lot of stuff left to do yet. If the Senate goes forward, though, Bowers is kind of put in a tough spot, right? Like the House can't do anything without the Senate there.
Yeah, you know, this is a very strange situation, and it, you know, the House and the House leadership has seemed to be, I don't want to say in disarray, that's maybe too strong a word, but they definitely haven't been on the same page this past session, and definitely not on the same page with the Senate. But the House internally, they don't seem to understand what their caucus wants sometimes. They say one thing one day, they come back and change their mind the next day. And the bottom line, I think, is there's some members in the House caucus that want to continue to push some personal issues, some agenda items that they really believe in that probably, you know, aren't related to the current situation we're in any longer, both economically, the pandemic, whatever it may be. But they don't want to go home, and they want to push those issues. Well, I think most of the members down there want to focus solely on economic, healthcare, anything related to the pandemic crisis, and only that. I think that's probably what the governor wants for the most part. So at the end of the day, I think the speaker really needs to kind of get his house in order, no pun intended, and bring his caucus in line, because you don't want to get in a long, drawn out, protracted fight with the Senate, and or you don't want to have your hand forced by the Senate, because that doesn't look good for your leadership.
Paul, do you see this ending any other way than the House being forced to adjourn as well, assuming the Senate does what it says it is going to do?
Well, this is certainly a constitutional quandary. There's very little precedent, if any, on what to do with this type of stalemate. It's going to test leaders of both chambers seriously, particularly Bowers in the House, because he's always led with a majority of the majority. And I do think a majority of the House members overall want to do this, but I'm not sure a majority of the majority. Back to those political pressures, you see some of the House members saying things like, people, we should open up the economy, and if people want to stay home under their covers, they should. That's a little troubling, definitely. I think ultimately it's important for them to come back at some point. There's major issues to be addressed, large economic development opportunities that could help the economy recover. Still those short-term rental issues, firefighter cancer presumptions, another one. There's going to be municipal shortfalls that need to be dealt with, as well as education and water issues. So they'll need to come back. The question is when. I just don't see them in a good spot, you know, trying to deal with this. It feels like they're going to be forced along at some point.
And Chad, without reading every lawmaker's mind, which I know would be painful probably for all of us, at this point, how much of this is political because it is an election year and they want to show as if they have accomplished something, especially those who are on different sides of the ideological spectrum?
Again, I said this earlier. You can't take the political aspect out of politics. It's impossible.
Thank you.
Yeah, a lot of this is political. And there are a lot of, as we all know, very conservative, for lack of a better term, Republicans down there who want to placate their base with social related issues, with ideological based issues that have nothing to do with the current landscape we're in as we've moved through this pandemic crisis. But to their voters, it's important. It's a badge of honor for them. It's something they can come back to their districts and tout. And that's really what they want to do. But, you know, quite frankly, if I'm the Republican caucus right now, especially in the House, and I only have a 2-seat majority, and if the trends continue, I would really want to focus on what matters to the voters, and that's getting us through this crisis. And at the end of the day, I, again, to Paul's point, I think a lot of the Republicans down there want to solely focus on that, but they're being hijacked by some other Republicans. But if they don't, I think they're going to pay a price for this November. If they continue to try to focus on issues that aren't related to the pandemic and aren't related to our current economic problems, they're going to pay a price in November. And I think they're going to regret trying to push some of these agendas that they started with and are no longer relevant.
Paul, let me ask you about that very quickly. We have about a minute left or so. Is this the kind of issue that come November, voters who are also voting for president in U.S. Senate, like, is this the kind of thing that they'll be thinking about when they're looking at who to vote for state legislature?
Who knows?
It's a very honest answer.
Things have changed. Well, no, I mean, things have changed so much in the past 6 weeks. It's hard to tell. I do think there's going to be, education was the top issue facing the state before the pandemic. I think it will come back with this massive downturn in revenue. It's going to impact in education. They're going to have to address that. But those same traditional going home issues that Chad was talking about, those are going to be less important. I do think voters are going to pay attention to what the legislature is doing in particular as we come to November.
Chad, about 10 seconds.
There's no way to predict anything. it could change next week, to Paul's point. You know, we'll talk about this next time we're on the show, I'm sure. So yes. I'll leave it at that.
Former legislative leader Chad Campbell of Strategies 360. Paul Bentz of High Ground. If you follow us on Twitter, Paul was not wearing a tuxedo today, but he probably won line of the day with who knows. So, guys, thanks as always for being with us. Take care. Be well.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.